From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st. I'm Lamont Holden. Brian Mackey is away. I'm a professor in the music department at the University of Illinois. I'm also a producer, so the discussion we're about to have hits close to home. Since its genesis almost 50 years ago, hip-hop has been an inextricable part of American popular culture. Whether it's the East Coast, the West Coast, the Deep South, or right here in rural Illinois, hip-hop's influence is woven into so many parts of American life. Fashion, music, art, language. So hip-hop is also often overlooked by prestigious institutions and rarely given legitimacy to from the powerful and the influential, whether it be the Grammys or the Oscars, the Pulitzer Prize, or right here in our own hallways and colleges and universities. Here's an example. The intro music you just heard coming into today's show was from Kendrick Lamar's 2017 album titled Damn. Lamar was the first ever hip-hop artist to win a Pulitzer Prize in music for that album. That took nearly 50 years since the birth of hip-hop. Now, if I read a list of the other winners in the past 50 years, you may or may not be surprised to hear a list that almost completely dominated by classical music, opera, and mostly white artists. Joining me now to talk a little bit about the history of hip-hop, how it's historically been delegitimized by cultural institutions, and the work being done to legitimize it in academia are Dr. Courtney Joseph. She is an assistant professor of history and African-American studies and the chair of African-American studies at Lake Forest College. Courtney, thanks for joining us on the 21st. Also joining us is my friend and colleague, Dr. Adam Cruz. He's an assistant professor of music education at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Adam, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you so much for having me.
And so, Courtney, I kind of wanted to start with you. As I mentioned, looking at some of the classes you've taught, they include the history of hip-hop and women and gender in hip-hop. Why is hip-hop an important thing to be taught?
First, let me just say again, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm really excited for this conversation to be here with y'all. And I'm also proud, you know, University of Illinois alum, so this should be fun. Really, I'm a lover of hip hop and have been for many, many years. And when I was applying for jobs after I was finishing up my PhD in 2017, and I got the interview at Lake Forest, one of the things, you know, when you're on an interview, you're trying to say everything to get yourself the job. And I was on a lunch time with some students, and I mentioned that I would love to teach a class on the history of hip hop. And they like lost it. They were like, are you serious? Like, do you want to start now? And I was like, I mean, I could, but the secret was, is I had no idea of how to teach that sort of course, right? Like, it was literally something I just said. And when I got the job, that was one of the first classes they asked me to teach. And so I realized it was something that allowed my students to see themselves in the history classroom. It allowed for us to talk about more modern history, whether it's African diaspora or, you know, Black urban histories right now. It allowed for students to get a deeper look behind the lyrics. And a lot of them are listening to hip hop, not only some of them for the lyrics, but a lot of times for the beats. And so to help them to see that there's a lot more to this story behind there, I think is what makes hip hop such a powerful tool in the classroom.
And that's amazing. So, and the three of us are here today as educators, excuse me, who teach hip hop in some form, from like a history context or sociological context. So it seems like progress a little bit, but, you know, historically, it just hasn't been honored, right? You know, you think about decision makers who we have to appeal to make these things happen, right? So you as a historian, why do you think it's so hard to get these decision makers on board?
You know, hip hop is something that is the voice of protest oftentimes. And it starts off, you know, as an underground local thing in New York City, you know, that speaks to the deindustrialization at the time that's happening, this new flow of immigrants coming from the Caribbean, coming from Latin America, coming from the continent of Africa, speaks to the ending of the Black freedom movement, right? After we've had this vacuum of leadership, you know, either assassinated or exiled or incarcerated, there's this lack of something, but that doesn't mean there's like a lack of creativity or lack of that energy. And so When hip hop starts, it's really not for the public, right? Like a lot of people think, oh, you know, there have been hip hop albums this whole time and all of that. And that's just not the case until, you know, we get to the late 70s with Rapper's Delight, right? And for, you know, the first several decades of hip hop after that, it was really seen as something that was going to go away. How is this something that's serious? How does, you know, these, again, these, you know, young, usually it is the music of the young. Although I'm hoping that, you know, with Snoop Dogg and Jay-Z aging, people like me can still listen to hip hop for a long time. But, you know, it just wasn't seen as something that was going to be serious, especially because of the people who were creating it. But once it really got into mainstream, once, you know, young white suburban kids are trying to listen to NWA, you know, trying to keep up with, you know, Eminem lyrics, all of that, it becomes something that is has to be taken more seriously. But what it also does is, again, it's a music of protest. It's Public Enemy. It is NWA. And it also is party songs, right? But in order to take that seriously, then that means you have to take the people who are saying it seriously. And oftentimes those are young Black and brown kids who are often not seen as, you know, real American citizens or taken seriously by those in power.
I'm delighted for our listeners right now because you dropped so much knowledge in that statement. So, Adam, I want to bring you into the conversation because I know you have a unique perspective on this. You recently wrote a research paper called Take a Backseat, White Music Teachers Engaging Hip-Hop in the Classroom. What a mouthful. Can you tell us a little bit about what your research has explored as it pertains to hip-hop in education?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I just want to echo how wonderful it is to hear from Dr. Joseph and all that knowledge she's dropping. I really appreciate that. I mean, as a white person myself who engages with hip-hop scholarship and thinking about hip-hop in music education, I think it's really important to understand where hip-hop is coming from, like Dr. Joseph is saying, and also if we want to engage with it in music education, that we have to come to grips with what is music education and who are music educators and who has been deciding how music education works. And so if we want to engage with hip hop in music education right now, that reality is that hip hop is going to be engaged with by teachers who are predominantly white and who are predominantly not themselves hip hop musicians because of the ways that schools of music work that grant degrees for music educators, it is very unlikely that music educators are themselves hip-hop musicians. And it is, we know from the statistics that they are predominantly white. And so what is it like then is what my research is looking at this moment. What is it like then for teachers who are not hip-hop musicians and who are predominantly white to be teaching hip-hop in school spaces?
And so just to follow that up, we know that Bach and Beethoven are taught ad nauseum in education, yet we don't really hear much about Nipsey Hussle or Griselda. And in a more modern comparison, we see something like rock music and other genres being taught more than something like hip hop. I'm curious if you have a perspective as a music educator as to why, and do you think it will change?
Well, yeah, I mean, my take on it is this. You asked this question about legitimizing hip hop. I mean, hip hop is legitimate. It's been legitimate. It's been legitimate for a while, you know, like you mentioned the Pulitzer and all this, right? It's the school music space that is having trouble understanding why. And part of that is because of its history. And part of it is that it connects to the ways in which it is predominantly white and filled with predominantly white people. So as a white person myself, I mean, I grew up with this idea that my culture is the normal culture. Right. And so therefore, if to set up a rubric of what is legitimate music as a white person in a predominantly white space where we're predominantly studying Eurocentric music, then the rubric for what is legit is based on things like Mozart piano sonatas and Beethoven string quartets and, you know, Haydn symphonies. Like that's the rubric. So when that's the rubric to decide what's legitimate, well, when you bring in Nipsey Hussle and you bring in Jay-Z, it doesn't match the rubric. But meanwhile, in the rest of the world, the rubric changes all the time, right? And so I think it's schools of music need to be asking the question, not is hip-hop legitimate, but is what schools of music teaching, is that legitimate for young people in the 21st century?
Courtney, what would you add to that?
I definitely think it's something that, again, has to be taken seriously. And that requires us to look at the history of these folks seriously, right? And to listen to the lyrics as, you know, I think NWA is the one who said it, like, you know, we're giving you the news from the hood, right? And that to legitimately listen to what is happening in the music allows us then to take it seriously. I mean, Kendrick Lamar's Damn, right? Which, who knew that after To Pimp a Butterfly that we were going to get something like potentially better? I had no idea when that happened, and that's why he's in my top five for sure. You know, that's a Pulitzer Prize album because it is intricate. It tells a story. The beats are insane. The interludes, like, and the fact that you can listen to it backwards and then he puts it out backwards for us, like, kids are into that. And, you know, with the rise of social media in the last, you know, several years, you know, people who are listening to hip hop and the kids who are listening to hip hop are doing critical analysis on the texts. Like, they're listening to it, they're reading it, they're going on Genius, and they're trying to figure out what the messages are. And we have to do the same thing. And until we're comfortable with recognizing that, and I really like, you know, what you just said, Adam, in terms of like, maybe the rubric is what needs to change, right? And I'm always pushing educators to think about how we're in a space to learn always, and being around students gives us the opportunity to learn best from them and to figure out how we can best reach our students. And hip hop provides us one way of doing that. And so hip hop is also not just what you hear on the radio as well, right? Like, a lot of people think that, you know, they're only listening to the stuff on the radio and that's what hip hop is. But hip hop has so, I mean, it's global at this point, and there's something for everybody. And so I think if people can take the time, just like with any other genre of music, to find what speaks to them, then that can be an entry point to starting to understand how to legitimize it in the classroom.
That's very powerful. Listeners, if you're just joining us, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Lamont Holden, and we're having a discussion on hip-hop and its struggle for legitimacy in American institutions. I'm speaking with Dr. Courtney Joseph. She is an assistant professor of history and African-American studies and the chair of African-American studies at Lake Forest College. And we're also joined by Dr. Adam Cruz. He's an assistant professor of music education at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. So right now, I want to play a clip from a song that I think exemplifies the conversation that we're having right now. It's from an artist named Yuneer Gaines, and the song is called Conscious 2. Let's listen.
Away from the hassle to live that its color brings, looking for tools in order to succeed. We the last ones to achieve, left starving, yet you feed up our culture to eat. Irony through it all, icing on veins. We like, sheesh. You hear that, black boy, black girl? You control the world, it's really that real. As a whole, we're never attacking anyone. Just realizing our power is open to everyone. And the only thing about that I'm upset with is that nobody wants to give us credit.
So what struck me in this verse is those last three lines. Just realizing our power is open to everyone. And the only thing that I'm upset with is that nobody wants to give us credit. And I think what he's talking about when he says credit, I think he's talking about stakeholdership. And from my experience, sometimes it's like, I just feel like, don't pimp hip hop, partner with hip hop. Mm-hmm. Courtney, do you have a perspective on that?
Yeah. Do we have enough time? no, I mean, I can give you a short take on that. I mean, as hip hop became mainstream, we see what happens with, you know, a similar thing that happens with jazz, that happens with blues, that happens with pop music, that happens with country music, that happens with all sorts of rock music. It becomes then what the status quo, again, the white kids from the suburbs, when their parents were like, you know, what are these kids listening to? And they realized it was going to make a lot of money. Then it becomes all of these execs, white execs who, you know, have no idea really where the industry and where the sound is coming from, just knowing that it's profitable. And that, again, dilutes, I think, the power of what hip hop is or can be oftentimes. It gives, I think, a negative image of hip hop, right? Which hip hop gets blamed all the time for being, you know, misogynistic, which I'm not gonna sit here and say that it's not, or homophobic or transphobic. And again, I'm not gonna sit here and say that it's not. But why are those the major artists that are getting played on the radio? Why are those the major artists that, you know, are getting streamed? And when you are going to your Spotify list or your iTunes list, those are the artists that you're hearing first. it doesn't necessarily mean that's the what's the most popular and what's coming out and what, you know, those who are in those areas want to listen to first. It's that voyeuristic nature of wanting to imagine what Black and Brown life looks like in urban areas, impoverished areas. And that voyeurism is really what leads us to thinking about how hip hop has kind of been pimped out in the last, you know, several decades. Again, before we even had the first hip hop record, for the first 6 years of hip hop, it is only on the streets.
And Dr. There's Joseph, I hate any, to interrupt you.
Know, cassette tapes.
And Dr. Joseph, I hate to interrupt you. We're actually up against the break. So we're going to pick this up when we come back, including a conversation about top five MCs. I'm Lamont Holden with Dr. Courtney Joseph and Dr. Adam Cruz. More to come on the 21st.
It's I again, and the soul that I send is taking steps to reach your heart.
Support for the 21st comes from Christie Clinic. Christie Clinic, providing health care to the community for more than 90 years. Local procedures, providers, specialties, and choice. Christie Clinic is focused on caring for the community.
True joy is ready for what you possess. We could live in my plug to home and on Mars where we could be all alone and we make a song for two picture perfect things.
This is the 21st. I'm Lamont Holden in for Brian Mackey. And as you may have guessed from the theme music you just heard, we're having a discussion about hip-hop history, specifically the place that hip-hop has had in academia in the past. My guests are Dr. Courtney Joseph. She's an assistant professor of history and African-American studies and the chair of African-American studies at Lake Forest College, and Dr. Adam Cruz. He's an assistant professor of music education at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. So, Courtney, let's talk about institutions that have historically been dominated by white decision-makers and by consequence have benefited mostly white artists. As we touched on earlier, it took until 2018 for the first hip-hop artist, Kendrick Lamar, to be recognized with the Pulitzer Prize. We saw hashtags like hashtag Grammy so white or hashtag Oscar so white in recent years in response to Black artists and Black excellence being overlooked time after time. Courtney, what has to change from a systematic level?
So many things. I think these things are all tied to many of the same issues in our country. Again, with who gets to be an American, who gets to be seen as a citizen, who's seen as legitimate in this country. And, you know, of course, the Grammys and the Oscars want to have all of the Black performers and want to make sure their red carpets are full of, you know, the hottest of the hot. And at the same time, then give the awards to, you know, Macklemore or, you know, any of these other artists who clearly are a more comfortable face of what hip hop is. And so I really think this goes down to thinking about who makes those decisions, you know, who's on the Recording Academy, you know, decision makers, who's, you know, within the academy making these choices. And, you know, at an institution, you know, I'm at a predominantly white institution and I've been very blessed that because the class is so popular that I teach and that because there's still, it's so rigorous course, it, you know, it's not because it's a hip hop course, now it's suddenly easy. We still are diving into the war on drugs and again, doing critical analysis of texts. I have my students do album reviews as historical critical analysis papers and they struggle. And because it's still a rigorous academic course, I've, you know, at the place where that is respected amongst many of my peers and those in power, but that, you know, took them to take it seriously or to take a chance on it. And that again is coming from the youth. So I think we have to listen to who are at the majority, even if they are often seen as the minority.
Yeah. And so Adam, what are the steps to change? What are the tangible steps to change?
Well, you know, I think that, there are potentially a lot, and I think it's a trap sometimes to think that they're going to go in a linear order, right? That there's one and that has to be followed by two and followed by three and followed by four, because I think there's, you know, there's 100 different steps that have to be taken kind of all at the same time. And so when I think of music education, I always think of music education as an ecosystem, down to the youngest preschool kids through the college professors and through, you know, everywhere in between into the industry and everywhere else. And so if we're thinking about music education, if it wants to engage more meaningfully with hip hop, not in a superficial way, right, not in a way that sanitizes it and makes it safe and takes away all these important elements that Dr. Joseph is mentioning, but if it's going to do it in a meaningful way, then we need young kids who are into hip hop to be able to see that as part of their education. They need to be able to see in their teachers, they need to be able to see themselves and their culture represented and respected. And so then we need music teachers. We need kids in, you know, middle school and high school who want to go on to be music teachers who are hip hop musicians. And then we need higher education institutions to be able to honor that and to be able to actually bring in a DJ who DJs. And that's what they do, as opposed to a DJ who also has to play the violin really well or something like that, right? So we need to be able to affect the entire ecosystem, which means curricular changes, it means personnel changes. It means making like bold hires, like hiring a self-taught trap producer to be a composition professor at a university in a school of music, right? It takes those big steps, but none of those steps all on their own is going to really make the change, because every single one of those steps has the opportunity to just to be a token step, to be just about like visible diversity, but not about meaningful change to an institution. So it's like, it's all the things at once. We got to take a lot of steps all at once. And that involves not just adding things into school music spaces, not just saying, well, okay, we'll add an elective course, or we'll add this, or we'll add that, but that we need to actually be able to look at what's there and say, hey, we got to take away some things to make some space. We've got to question the assumptions that these institutions are built on, to be able to say, why has it been that we have not been able to bring in a trap producer or an MC as a music major in our space?
Yeah, I think there's a message here today for somebody. I don't know who needs to hear this, right? But there's a message out there today, right? Because I think this is important stuff. So obviously, as important as these conversations are and as serious as these topics are, I want to switch gears, because hip hop is still supposed to be fun, right? And this is the part I'm really excited about. Dr. Joseph, we were going back and forth yesterday on Twitter about this. But so I want to have two conversations. First, I want to hear who your top five are. But then let's talk about just top five MCs, period, and why that's important, the culture around that, right? So here's the question. Dr. Joseph, who are your top five MCs?
This is an oft-asked question, and thanks to Chris Rock for, you know, bringing that forward for us in his movie. You know, this is if you're a real hip-hop head, you got to have your top five ready at any point. And I give my students, over the course of my semester, I like drop hints over the course, and they usually guess by the end. But my top five, I'm gonna go with, you know, Sean Carter, of course, Jay-Z, who is, I love and will always love, Biggie, because how could you not? Andre 3000, because I don't know if I can do any Andre 3000 verse fully, like what an incredible lyricist. Kendrick Lamar, obviously, and Lauryn Hill, because we don't give enough to women in hip hop. Shout out to Meg Thee Stallion, who I also love a ton, and Cardi B and all of them. But Lauryn Hill is the female MC for me, who, you know, really introduced me to how lovely the bars could be.
And Adam, real quick, got to keep it quick. Who's your top five?
All right, like real quick. I think that the top five is a good way to like get cred. And for, as a white person in hip hop space, I get asked this question all the time, but I'm going to flip it and I'm not going to actually answer it, because I don't need to earn cred with NPR listeners. And I know you and I are good, and Dr. Joseph, you and I can connect sometime and I'll let you know my top five. But here's my top five. It's my community. It's my local people. It's the people I work with. It's the people who are an important part of our community here in Champaign-Urbana and in Illinois all the time. So I'm going to name Black Mage. I'm going to name Jamie Gatson. I'm going to name Jarrell Young. I'm going to name Mother Nature. I'm going to name Afro D, who's got a show at Rose Bowl Tavern Sunday this afternoon. Everybody in CU area, come check him out.
That was smooth. I like that. I like how you did that. So here's my top five real quick, and I'm going to keep it simple. It's J, Cole, Kendrick, Freddie, and Tyler. And here's all I'm going to say. To me, it's like top-ranked boxing. What's happening right now today? I'm not discounting what Tyler did this year. Freddie just grabbed a Grammy nomination. You know what I'm saying? So to me, it's like top-ranked boxing. You ask me next week, it might be different. So we're up against the break. We're going to get ready to head out. This has been an awesome conversation about hip hop. Thank you, Dr. Joseph. Thank you, Dr. Cruz. And yeah,